I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest, building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. And just trust. Believe.
Drowned by Ghost Kids, by Mia. I can't remember the exact year, but it was Memorial Day weekend, probably around 2010. I was about 8 or 9 years old, and it was my first time being invited to my family's annual beach trip. That year, I went with my aunt, uncle, and cousin. We all crammed into my aunt's car and drove about 2 hours to Seaside, a small beach town on the Oregon coast. We were staying in a really nice hotel, with a complete ocean view. Most of that trip is a blur now, but one thing happened that will forever haunt my memory. Something I've never been able to explain. At the time, I wasn't tall enough to stand in the 5-foot section of the pool, the deepest part. But I was a decent swimmer, and it had never been a problem before. That day, though, it would turn out to be a pretty big one. It was around midday. My uncle, cousin, and I were playing in the pool, which was nearly empty except for a few scattered people lounging nearby. One of our favorite games was giving each other piggyback rides in the water. My uncle was the base, my cousin was in the middle, and I was on top. We were laughing and wobbling, trying not to tip over as we moved around. My uncle started walking us toward the deep end so we could have more room to splash and goof around. All of a sudden, though, a boy with sandy blonde hair and, oddly enough, a black peg leg jumped off the side of the pool in the deep end, accompanied by a girl with matching blonde pigtails. Before I could react, they landed on top of me. It felt intentional, like they aimed straight for my back. They seemed to be struggling to stay afloat and used my body to push themselves upward, shoving me down in the process. I was screaming, thrashing, trying to break free, but I couldn't get air. I remember the water burning in my nose and throat, the sound of muffled splashing, and then nothing. My vision went black. The next thing I knew, my uncle was pulling me up from the bottom of the pool and setting me on the steps. I was coughing, gasping, disoriented. My family was surrounding me, wide-eyed, asking what had happened. Between sobs, I told them about the kids, the boy and the girl who had jumped on me and wouldn't let me come up. But then came the part that made my blood run cold. No one had seen them, not a single person. My cousin thought I was joking at first, until she realized I had stopped moving. She said I'd gone completely still for a terrifying amount of time. To this day, I still don't know what happened. I thought about it more times than I can count, replaying every detail, trying to make sense of those kids, the way they appeared out of nowhere, and how no one else saw them. I've never seen them again, and I've never had any other experiences like it. Something about that moment felt wrong, though. It felt real, but I wonder if those kids were just some form of residual energy. Maybe they drowned there. Maybe they were looking for someone to join them. The scariest part, my cousin, who was right there with me, says that she fully believes me. She remembers the look on my face when I was pulled out of the water. She said it wasn't the look of a prank. It was pure panic. So honestly, I'm not surprised she believes me. No matter how much time passes, I'll always remember the crushing blows of their feet, striking me on my back, head, and chest, and how I didn't think they'd ever let me go.
The Girl Under the Piano by Anonymous Z. Growing up, I never lived in a haunted house, but my mother did as a teen. Other houses on her street had strange things going on as well. A few homes away from her lived a family. One night, her aunt went to bed with a bad headache. The next day, she was dead. She had passed away from an aneurysm. At her funeral, the family went away to get their minds off of the tragedy, and my father asked my uncle, my mom's brother, to check on their pets. My mom and dad, who were dating at the time, went with him. My mother had heard that there was a grand piano, and she really wanted to play it. My dad was studying to be a veterinarian. After entering the house, my uncle said that my father headed to the basement to see the animals, and my mother went to the piano on the ground floor. She was playing it when she felt something brush her ankles. She thought that a cat must have left the basement and walked past her. She just kept playing, and then she felt it again. She looked under the piano and didn't see anything. When she started again, she felt two hands clasp her legs tightly. She dashed to the basement, called my uncle and father, and waited for them. Outside, my uncle could tell that my mom was rattled and asked her what was wrong. She told him about what happened, and he turned white. He said that her daughter, who had died, used to play a game with her father. When he would play the piano, she would crawl underneath it, grab his ankles, and push his feet up and down on the pedals. Now, I would have loved to meet you, my cousin, but please, stay in heaven.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
When you sit behind the wheel of the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X, you'll feel like the entire world is your playground, and you'd be right, because this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, the all-new Armada is powerful enough to take you anywhere. With its 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, it will let you bring all your toys along, and with seating for eight, your whole crew can join you. Nissan created a truly capable vehicle in the all-new Armada. In fact, it's the first Armada to earn the Pro 4X badge, which Nissan reserves for its most adventure-ready vehicles. The Armada is a big SUV designed and built for big adventures and must be experienced to be appreciated. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today.
Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving. It's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
My Recurring Dream by Emma. I believe there's a ghost attached to me, but it can only interact with me when I'm alone. When I was 16, I shared a room with my little sister Ella, who was just a few years younger. I'm the middle child of seven, and by then our two oldest siblings had already moved out. Ella was always out with friends, which meant I often had the room to myself at night. One of those nights, I fell asleep quickly. I'd been sick and exhausted all day. That night, I had a dream where everything in my room looked exactly as it did before I went to bed. But I felt something cold grip my ankles. It started dragging me slowly out of bed. I tried to kick, but I couldn't. The thing pulled me all the way to the floor. I couldn't believe it when I actually woke up there. I've never had a history of sleepwalking or sleep paralysis, so it was completely out of the ordinary. I ran to tell my mom. She was making breakfast for all of us, but she just brushed it off as a fever dream. I forgot about it until the next weekend when Ella went out again. I was happy to have the room to myself. It was around 1 a.m. All my siblings were either out or asleep. I was sitting there texting friends about boys or whatever was going on at school, when the light in my room flicked on for a few seconds, then started flickering rapidly. I got scared and decided to just go to sleep. And it happened again. Same dream, same cold grip around my ankles. I woke up on the floor. My mom found me that morning and asked why I was sleeping there. I started crying. I told her it only happens when Ella is gone. She didn't seem to care. From then on, the dream happened every single time I was left alone in that room. I'm married now and live in my own house. My husband is a missionary and leaves for weeks at a time. And every night he's gone, the dream returns. Worse, I've started to see things in the house. There's a tall figure with long arms, massive hands, and unnaturally long fingers. I only see it when my husband is away, but I know it's the same thing that's been attached to me all these years. I honestly have no idea what it is, but I'm sure it's not just sleep paralysis, because it doesn't just happen when I'm dreaming. I've gotten used to it over time. But sometimes, when I really stop to think about it, it still scares me.
What I've Learned from the Mantis Aliens by Eugenia Lully. I grew up in Greece. I saw a UFO around 1989 at about 7 p.m. as a teenager. I was with my school friend at the time, walking in our small town, and she saw it too. The UFO was silent, hovering above my religious studies high school teacher's house. He had a 4-year-old kid at the time. My guess, based on what I know about them, it was there for the kid. After it disappeared from our view, I felt the UFO flying above us, and I saw it out of the corner of my eye. Upon looking directly at it, I couldn't see anything. A bunch of other teenage kids saw the UFO that night as well and reported it to the police. I confronted one of the kids a few days later at school, but he refused to talk about it. Fast forward to 2000. I was living in Guildford, Surrey, UK. I was working as a programmer. I was renting a room at a woman's house. One night I was sleeping, and the door was locked from the inside. I woke up to at least 2 gray aliens on my bed. When they realized that I was fully awake, one of them used a rod in the back of my head, which put me back to sleep, as if nothing even happened. In the morning, I woke up sore and in pain. The pain lasted for days. I had PTSD from that experience. It took months to get over it. Soon after, I started having health problems. My celiac disease wasn't properly diagnosed for another 10 years after that. The illness eventually left me childless due to various complications. May 2013, on my 40th birthday, in the Bay Area, US, a friend started talking about DMT, and I wanted to tell him to get off drugs. Now, I was very anti-drug, but I thought, why don't I first research the damn thing before I open my mouth and sound like a fool? My research on the topic opened the floodgates of information, and soon after, I was lucid dreaming. Now, I had never taken DMT, but I did meet my higher self, who called itself Hiva, and later on, my spirit guide, who called herself Esther. For all I know, they could be the same alien role-playing for my convenience. It didn't take me too long to figure out that I was dealing with a mantis alien instead. The first time I met Hiva, he had an iPad-like device where all my metrics were written, physical and psychological evaluations. When I tried to take a look at it, 2 voices from invisible people were heard telling Hiva to stop because I might not be ready. Hiva said that I was ready. From 2013 to 2018, I would suddenly have a whole bunch of lucid dreams, as many as 2 to 3 times a week. These guys opened the floodgates for me. They would put me through various VR tests. These are dreams, but they score you at the end. And they would talk to me about retrocausality and other such things. One time, I refused to play along, and the dream abruptly stopped. I found myself in the void. 2 higher-ups appeared and started questioning me as to why I didn't participate. Esther promised me that it would be good for me to do so, so I agreed. The dream restarted from the beginning, as if it were a computer program or something. In another lucid dream, Esther was angry at me, showing me on the iPad device what I had promised to do, but did not. She dropped her pretenses and looked like the mantis that she was. In fact, in that lucid dream, she hit me near the liver. I felt the pain, and when I woke up, the pain continued. Esther went on to tell me the future 3 times. Twice, she was spot on. For example, in 2014, she told me that my business Instagram account would be hacked, and it was, 2 days later, out of the blue. The 3rd time, she was half right. She had stressed that the future is ever-changing, and our decisions shape it. A decision can change a prediction. That 3rd time, she correctly predicted the exact date something would happen, and it did. However, she didn't know the outcome, because that depended on my actions. That 3rd time, put a huge strain on our relationship because it was about something important to me. But she wasn't allowed to help any further, not even to advise me. I obviously messed it up. That pissed me off, and while I don't consciously remember it, I'm pretty sure that I raised hell. My lucid dreaming stopped abruptly in March of 2018. They closed the door. It now only happens 2 to 3 times a year when she wants to tell me something important. 1 week before that third prediction was to happen, the Greys revisited me. I have the conscious memory of them bringing me back only. I couldn't move, but I managed to move my arm with great effort and told them that I wasn't scared of them anymore and to let me move. To no avail, they just put me back to sleep. The last time I talked to Esther, she told me that I needed to take care of Star and that it was a gift to beat my loneliness. Now, I had no idea what she meant. However, a week later, I got a new neighbor named Star. Star was an artist like me. We became close friends. Now, here are some things that I was told or concluded during that time. The Mantis aliens are often seen wearing a purple cloak and a medallion. I asked them about it, and they said the medallion is actually a device, not a symbol of status. They consider themselves neutral, or at least they strive for that. The Mantis are the so-called spirit guides people experience in between lives, and they take care of reincarnations. According to Michael Newton, PhD's book Journey of Souls, the spirit guides have a purple aura and wear a medallion. Now, this was written before the Mantis aliens became as known as they are today, and even now, most people only see the Greys. In other words, UFOs are not people from other planets per se. I've surmised the phenomenon is a control and support system for reincarnation. The planet belongs to them, and we're renting the place while we incarnate here. They are behind social engineering via religious creation and folk myths. They're driving our evolution via intellectual, social, and of course, genetic methods. And please note that despite speaking about reincarnation here, I still consider myself an atheist. I don't see reincarnation as a religious thing, but rather a system that can happen either naturally or through technology. Lately, I lean towards the latter. The Mantis is the most common alien seen on DMT, ayahuasca, and mushrooms. They're called insectoids in the psychedelic space. When I asked a Mantis, not Esther, as to why it's usually them that we bump into in hyperspace, he replied, "We intersect." Now, abductions mostly happen in the astral, a fourth spatial dimension where time and consciousness are more interwoven than in 3D. I believe that 100% of humans get abducted over time. Physical abductions are extremely rare and typically for genetic purposes, but the rest of us are interacting with aliens. We just don't realize it because these experiences are masked as dreams. In these interactions, the incarnated person usually undergoes tests or gets advice from their guides. In one of my astral abductions, I was dreaming a normal dream, but a tooth was hurting me in this weird way inside the dream. I managed to wake up inside the dream, or become lucid, only to see a gray above me, drilling. It quickly placed me back into the dream. They basically serve VR experiences while they're doing work on you, in addition to planting screen memories. Now, many people have experienced a grid in the sky around the Earth. It's easy to see under mushrooms or LSD, but some have seen it sober. I experienced it in one of my lucid dreams. I've been told that the grid is artificial and operates via AI. It has a dual function to manage humans who might astral project or lucid dream by mistake and to stop other races from interfering. The grid is what people on DMT call the waiting room. The AI decides if one is ready to experience hyperspace or not. It is a control system. I haven't decided whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. It might interfere with our ability to evolve in the astral as well as in the physical. In another lucid dream, I was outside of a U.S. military facility and couldn't enter. The more I tried to push my way in, the more I was gently pushed back, as if trying to walk through a sponge. An entity next to me told me that I could not enter because the U.S. now has technology to repel consciousness from remote viewing. I know there are a lot of people who say the Greys have no souls, etc., but I'm not sure if that's correct. When asked, the Greys said, "We are you." It is my understanding that the Greys are the next step for human souls in their evolutionary process. Grey artificial cloned bodies are powered by souls, not AI, unless, of course, our souls are just glorified AI as well. After we're done incarnating on Earth, it's our turn to serve the souls that still incarnate. I believe that's the Grey's function, in service of us, foot soldiers for the Mantis and the overall system. Why is this whole industrial reincarnation operation going on across several planets and not just Earth? Well, it's my understanding and my speculation that in the dimension we and they come from, the 5D, there is no casuality. There's no time with a before and after. Everything happens at the same time. There is only the eternal now. That's the physics of their dimension. To create change, or a future, in their dimensional reality, they must create change first in the third and fourth dimensions. Free will changes propagate naturally, since we're part of the same universe. Hence the 3D incarnations, or humans, and the 4D support system, or aliens. Notice how the elders speak to incarnating souls in near-death experiences or in-between lives hypnosis sessions. You are creator beings, and you have a mission to do on Earth. Now, as for the Mantis, they call our incarnations our duty. In other words, we're agents for change for everyone's benefit. We're workers. The elders set the plan regarding the future that they want to experience, and they send us to realize it. Through it, we evolve. You could call all of this symbiotic, or you could call it a prison. It's probably a point of view, or this could be way off. I don't know. The end game is something that they don't want to share with clarity.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
When you sit behind the wheel of the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X, you'll feel like the entire world is your playground. And you'd be right, because this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, the all-new Armada is powerful enough to take you anywhere. With its 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, it will let you bring all your toys along. And with seating for eight, your whole crew can join you. Nissan created a truly capable vehicle in the all-new Armada. In fact, it's the first Armada to earn the Pro 4X badge, which Nissan reserves for its most adventure-ready vehicles. The Armada is a big SUV designed and built for big adventures and must be experienced to be appreciated. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving. It's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to the Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
The Sinister Monk by Bree. This story takes place around the summer of 2005 when my grandfather passed away. I was only 5 years old then. My parents and I had traveled for the services and were all sleeping in the same bed in my dad's childhood home. Sometime during the night, my mom woke up suddenly. She opened her eyes and saw a black hooded figure with no face standing over her. She couldn't talk or move much, but she managed to bless herself, making the sign of the cross, and the dark figure vanished. The next morning, she told my dad about what happened, assuming it was a dream. My dad went quiet. He admitted a hooded monk in all black had haunted the house for years. My grandmother then opened up about all the times she had seen it and how she felt its energy was sinister. It used to pace back and forth on the top floor and then just stare at whoever was in the house. Even without any features, they could feel it staring at them before it would disappear. Fast forward a night or two later, the entire family was over at the house and I was upstairs with my cousin playing. For some reason, I ran to the closed bathroom door and yanked it open. Standing in the doorway was that figure. I just remember seeing all black. My cousin and I looked at it and then at each other, and then flew down the steps screaming. My parents obviously came running to see what happened. When I explained what we saw, my mom said, "Oh, honey, someone was probably just coming out from using the bathroom." So we waited and waited to see who it was, but no one ever came down. And when my parents checked upstairs, no one was there. My cousin, only 3 years old at the time, has this memory, although we don't bring it up often. This next part is less scary and actually a really cool moment my family had together. The night of my grandfather's funeral, the whole family was gathered around in the living room. My grandmother had a piano room off the living room, which housed all of her music equipment, books, and sheet music. As the family was sitting around talking, a paper floated in from the piano room. This wasn't just a piece of paper getting blown in from the wind or a draft. According to my family, as I was too little to really remember, the paper slowly floated through the air, gliding across the room to land very delicately at my dad's feet. He picked it up. It was sheet music to a song called "If I Love You." My grandfather used to ask my grandma to play it all the time, as it was his favorite song. My dad handed my grandma the music, and she said, "I have never ripped any music out of my books. I guess he wants me to play." So she went into the piano room to honor my grandfather with his favorite song. Throughout the years, my family and I had numerous encounters with all things supernatural, seeing shadows, hearing voices, and finding things that were missing suddenly showing up in the most obvious places. My father has always warned me about all of this, as his side of the family had a lot of experiences and used to practice witchcraft. His aunt used to read cards, not tarot, but actual playing cards. And when she found out that the bad things she was seeing were actually coming true, she stopped and warned the family not to mess with this stuff. My dad even has his ancestor's name on the accused witches list, in the Salem, Massachusetts famous witch museum. She had been accused of witchcraft. The trials ended before she could be executed, and afterward she admitted to being a witch and fortune teller. At every family event, it seems like someone tells a paranormal story I've never heard before. It's so fascinating to hear about our history and everyone's experiences, as we're all believers. Two Experiences with Ball of Light by OKN 1904. I had two strange experiences with spheres of floating light. I was about 11 the first time and around 15 the second time. I'm 24 now, and I was completely sober when this happened. During my first experience, I was camping with my cousins. I walked down to the pond about 10 to 15 yards away from my tent to go pee. I looked to my right and saw what I thought was a very bright lightning bug about 30 yards away. As it slowly approached me, I realized it was not a lightning bug, and it was actually the size of a baseball. It passed right by me, maybe 5 or 6 feet in front of me, and moved all the way across the pond. I remember seeing its reflection over the water as it moved. It never stopped. Just eventually disappeared into the woods. Now for my second experience. I was on a traveling soccer team and was staying in a hotel with my dad. I've always been really big on having complete darkness in the rooms I sleep in, so I closed the hotel's thick blackout curtains. I woke up in the middle of the night and went to the bathroom. Weird coincidence, maybe. I finished up and laid back down in bed. I didn't fall right to sleep, because something up at the ceiling quickly grabbed my attention. I saw a shadow and a faint light. At first, I thought it was a light from the smoke detector, but something felt very off about it. I was very awake at this point, very focused, and scared. The shadow then moved, as if something was casting it from around the curtains, but it moved like something with intelligence. As it continued to glide along the ceiling, I watched it move around the curtain and slip out of the room. Then, the small light moved and navigated behind the curtain as well. Both happened pretty slowly. Each took about 3 to 4 seconds to move out of the room. I interpreted them as two separate entities. I don't necessarily believe in aliens or whatever. I do, however, believe in the spiritual realm, and I am now a Christian.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
When you sit behind the wheel of the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X, you'll feel like the entire world is your playground. And you'd be right, because this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, the all-new Armada is powerful enough to take you anywhere. With its 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, it will let you bring all your toys along. And with seating for eight, your whole crew can join you. Nissan created a truly capable vehicle in the all-new Armada. In fact, it's the first Armada to earn the Pro 4X badge, which Nissan reserves for its most adventure-ready vehicles. The Armada is a big SUV designed and built for big adventures and must be experienced to be appreciated. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving. It's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to the Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
I am back. Back in action.
Yeah, I got a little bit lonely without our interaction last week.
Aw.
Tell me about your trip. How was it?
It was cool. It was pretty much everything you would expect with a Burning Man type of event, but I say that like in the best way possible. It was really cool, really cool. It's nice being part of like a community of people who just kind of are all there for the same sort of thing, which is a lot more than appears to be on the surface.
Yeah.
Building and tearing down and wholeness and oneness with everybody and helping out your neighbor and looking out for each other and just kind of singing kumbaya underneath the desert stars. It's a pretty magical thing. It's one of those things where you have to experience it for yourself, but it's also not for everybody. So I could get all woo-woo about it, but ultimately it's a subjective experience for each person. But I would recommend it if it's calling anybody's name to give it a shot.
Yeah, definitely. I thought originally it was just like a family camping trip. I actually had no idea where you were going, what was going on. You probably told me about it and it went one ear and out the other, just like everything my wife tells me. I promise I don't do it on purpose. I'm just really bad about retaining information.
It just means that you love me, because if the more you love somebody, the more you can discount what they have to say. So that's all it is.
Definitely using that one with my wife.
I don't know.
It was funny. We were sitting and watching TV while having dinner the other night, and she said something to me, and I remember I could recall the first part of what she said, but I was so wrapped up in the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm that I've seen 100 times before that whatever she said in full didn't really register. And I guess she asked me a question, and a few minutes go by and I look at her and she's just like, there's a look on her face that I'm like, something's wrong. I'm like, hey, what's wrong? She's like, nothing. I was like, no, really, what's wrong? She's like, I just asked you like two different questions and you ignored me the whole time.
Ooh.
And I was just like, it didn't even go in the ear. Like, I didn't even hear it or register it. Sometimes I think that like my brain shuts down and I can only focus on one thing at a time.
It's like a computer firewall, like preemptively blocking a connection. Like, no, I wanted to use that. I wanted to open that program, but no, the antivirus says you can't. I think that's what it is. Maybe your wife was talking about the Wives of Salt Lake, wherever that show is, the True Lives of, that reality show. She was probably watching a reality show and it just didn't register in your head. Your antivirus wouldn't allow it.
I know what show you're talking about. For some reason, I can't even think of the name. She watches it. She watches all of those shows, but I can't even think of the name of that dang show.
I tried. I watched like two episodes.
Yeah, definitely. But it was the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where they're like sitting at the dinner table and Larry just talked about how he was getting a divorce, and Jeff says like, hey, when we get a divorce, you can take half of everything. I'm not going to fight you about anything. And she's like, I'm taking you for every single thing you have if we're getting divorced. Are you kidding me? And yeah. She like said something about how like people stay together when they're miserable and they just never divorce and they probably miss out on like a happy life.
So I hear.
Yeah. And it just didn't register. And I was like, that's probably something I should have picked up on. I wonder if she's sending me signals.
Might want to revisit that one. Give her some reassurances.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think we're good. Anyways, really creepy stories this week. Drowned by ghost kids is the one that really got me.
Ooh. Yeah, you and me both. I almost went swimming in a watering hole over the weekend. I'm glad I didn't, because if there's one place that might have some ghost kids with a peg leg, it might be a Burning Man type of situation. So whether real or not, I don't know, but I think it would be equally as terrifying, just like it was for Maya in this story. The peg leg, I think we could probably talk about the elephant in the room. I don't understand why the peg leg? That's not to say like kids can't have prosthetic legs, but yeah. It's such a specific detail. I wonder if there's some way to maybe track down who this kid was. Maybe he may have drowned there in the past, or maybe he's from years long ago, back when like peg legs were more of a thing, like an actual peg, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Because that's what went through my head, like a wooden leg, like a literal pirate peg leg.
Yes. Like in the Lego set.
Exactly. You would say prosthetic leg or something like that.
Right.
You wouldn't say peg leg. It's such a very specific pirate-y like type thing. I've never heard that outside of a pirate reference.
You're not into pegging?
I'm not into pegging, not yet. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I got to try it once or twice, but you know,
yeah.
Well, never mind, but whatever.
Yeah, but this was creepy in the sense that it sounded exactly like this played out exactly like I've seen in a horror movie in my head. I could hear the music. Yes, I could see the camera angles and everything. It was such a great story.
Yeah, it was nice. I liked the piggyback rides in the pool. Uh-huh. I'm sure you've done that before, like seeing how many people can fit on one person's shoulders.
Oh, yeah.
Or like stacking like a top, get as vertical as you possibly can. That's mm-hmm. always fun. And water, that's always scary. I don't know what it is about water. Actually, no, I do, because I almost drowned a tragic death in the deep, violent waters of Guam. But I think I've told that story 1,000 times already.
While I'm terrified of the woods and camping, I'm a little uneasy about the water. Not terrified, but for some reason, I've always just been a little uneasy and not too comfortable in deep water.
Yeah, I could see that. I would say I'm more afraid of open water than I am a dense forest, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably because when I was a kid, I had this peg leg pirate kid that tried to drown me in the pool.
Hey, there you go.
That's what did it for me.
Did he have sandy blonde hair?
Yeah, it did. I had really blonde hair as a kid. I looked like Macaulay Culkin when I was really little.
I think I looked like the kid from the Crossfire commercial. Remember that game? Crossfire. Wow,
ooh, you're going to call Crossfire.
I like that you added who you're going to call in there. That's pretty good. I don't think that was in the lyrics, but that sounds good.
It was something on the same tempo.
Yeah. You're telling me you had like fingerless gloves and like a leather jacket with the sleeves cut off and stuff?
Yeah, that's one of those things. I used to tell people I was the kid in that commercial when I was like 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, those little white lies that you tell as a kid. I think one kid said that he had a Nintendo 64 cartridge that had every single Nintendo 64 game on it. And back then, I actually believed him.
I remember you telling me this.
But like, the funny thing is today, that's a reality with the EverDrives. That's so funny. That kid was probably a time traveler.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought of that, because you're correct. I have EverDrives for almost all of my systems because it's such a great way to play the games on your original hardware if you're snobs like we are. But you're right. It totally exists now. He probably took it back in time.
For whatever it's worth, and I'm like not even making light of things, but he was in special ed. So I think maybe like literally like could have been like a very special mind. He just knew some shit, and he knew that we were going to get Nintendo 64s with every single game on one cartridge. He just knew what was up.
He knew the future. He tapped into it.
Yep.
But yeah, that story definitely was just like a scene from a horror movie. And, you know, speaking of scenes from horror movies, I started reading The Exorcist, the book from the 70s that the movie was based on.
Good, good, good.
It's really good. It's very graphic, way more disturbing. I like it a lot, but I noticed that the writer writes very similar to how you would describe a scene from a movie. Like, he writes and it translates in your head just like a movie. It's really good. He does a great job with writing.
It's like a script almost.
Yeah. It's almost like a script, but in novel form, in prose. But I found out, I guess I forgot about this, but I guess the author of the book directed the third Exorcist movie, which is a great movie if you haven't seen it.
Yeah. I think that one was Dahmer's favorite. Not that his opinion carries any weight, but it is what it is.
Oh, don't compare me to Dahmer in some way.
Yeah.
It is one of my favorite movies, though. It's a great movie. And I guess he directed that one. And it makes sense because the pacing is so fast. I'm getting somewhere, I promise. Anyway, the story about the haunted piano kid also read exactly like a scene from a horror movie. Like it was something from The Others, which we referenced in one of our recent episodes. I really loved the stories this week. They were so creepy and vivid.
Yeah, no, I think anything with a piano is an automatic win. You get that.
Yeah.
Creepy. I don't know. Something about the tonality with it. You can always reference and fall back on a piano because it's comforting. It's always going to be a little familiar. We all know what a piano sounds like. That goes without saying. But yeah. You can capture a lot on there. And plus, like, let's see, with the Silent Hill games, you know, there's that puzzle with the piano.
Yeah.
I think they're like a good outlet to express some sort of haunted energy. You have to play things out.
Yeah.
Whether you're listening or participating and making the music. There's there's a lot to be said about the tones and melodies and sequences of things. Legend of Zelda, you got to play the tones on the ocarina. Ocarina, probably didn't say that right. But yeah, I think there's a big connection with musicality and reality.
Yeah, I agree. And one thing that actually I thought about, the ghosts like repeat something that was going on in their life when they were alive over and over again. Like they, you know, a haunted hotel, they'll say, oh yeah, there was a doorman that used to work here and you can see him walk by and sit by the door, or you can see his reflection in this mirror all the time, just like when he was working here. It's almost like the ghost doesn't know that they're a ghost and they're just kind of stuck in that loop. Just like this little girl stuck sitting there under the piano waiting for somebody to play it so she can grab their ankles and play the game that she played when she was a kid. It's like she doesn't even know that she's a ghost and that she's there just repeating the same thing over and over again. It's kind of a sad and scary thought.
Going back to Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I promise it makes sense, it's a lot like when Larry David in real life quit Seinfeld, or no, he quit SNL, and then he was like, oh yeah. No, I made a big mistake, and then just got the advice to show up the next day like nothing happened. It's like the ghosts are doing that. They died, and no, I don't accept that fate for myself. So they're just reliving life or going through the motions as if it never happened.
Yeah, I remember him telling that story about how he wrote that episode of Seinfeld where George quits, then goes back to work the next day and pretends like he didn't quit or that he was joking or something. He's like, yo, I actually did that Saturday Night Live. That's so funny. Yep. Yeah. Good stuff. Good wraparound.
Good wraparound. As I turn off my thermostat from my phone momentarily, off. So would you have sat back down and kept playing or figured something out? I would have probably doubled down and tried to do some really cool melodies or something, played some Fear Elise. I think that's about all I know how to play that anybody can recognize.
Yeah.
Are you vaping or sucking on a USB drive? What's going on there?
I'm not vaping. It's not a USB drive. It's a bloodstone that I got from...
Whoa, look!
No.
Check this out. Bloodstone, what? Baby, a sphere.
Wow.
I got this recently. It called out to me. I'm like, I gotta have that. And Bloodstone's like my latest fixation.
And you know what's crazy is I bought this a long time ago, but I lost it and found it today.
Wow.
So I was like, I'm gonna keep this right by my desk while I'm working because it's so smooth, it's all polished and stuff. And I just sit here and play with it while I'm talking, kind of put it in my mouth. Like, I like it.
Play with it just a little bit and get a feel for it, see how much you like it.
See if I like it or not.
And you just want more.
Maybe I'll make a lifestyle change. Who knows?
Hey, who knows? As long as it's polished. Lots and lots of polish. Yeah. That is pretty cool, though. I like that. So what about it spoke to you specifically? Or like when you initially got it, how'd you end up with it? And what about it drew you to the Bloodstone?
It was one of those things where I was in Old Sacramento. So going through all of the shops, and I went to that, I forget what it's called, mystical little shop where you get incense and books on witchcraft and stuff like that. And I remember before going in there, just Googling like stones or crystals I could get. It's just they're supposed to help with stress and, you know, just supposed to be good for you or whatever. And it was one of the ones that popped up, and I grabbed it, looked at it, and I thought, ooh, this is a really nice, it's got a nice little indention for my thumb to rub on. I really like it. And it definitely calms me down. It's probably placebo, but that doesn't matter because placebo is magic, just like crystals and rocks and stones.
Well, I agree. I think the placebo, maybe initially it doesn't have the effect. I guess then technically it wouldn't be a placebo, but yeah. That's all to say. There is something to be said about it. I know Bloodstone itself supposedly provides like mental clarity and gives you some resilience and confidence, but I think most descriptive words for crystals or stones or whatever can kind of be applied across the board. Maybe just some have certain properties more than others. Physically, it supposedly helps boost circulation, detoxifies you a little bit, but I personally don't think it necessarily does that, like on a physical level. However, the mental, emotional, spiritual stuff, there's a lot to be said with that. It does. It grounds me a bit. I like keeping something by my desk, as do you.
Yeah. I've got a few over here. Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, they're just cool.
They're very cool. I mean, everything's vibrating at some kind of frequency. That's how matter exists.
Correct.
So they have vibrations, and maybe it's some good vibrations. Rest in peace, Brian Wilson. Dear Lord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always cool to reflect on the fact that everything has some sort of vibration, and just the fact that everything only exists within our mind's ability to perceive it. If the human brain can't perceive it, it's like it doesn't exist, or at least acknowledge it. Which, if you really, really sit and think about that, it's kind of unsettling. Like, what do animals notice and perceive and think of? Or what does the universe know that we don't? Like, where are our blind spots? We think we have blind spots. Mm-hmm. Well, we do have blind spots, but we think we've identified our blind spots. But there are questions that our brain can't even conceive of to start asking. And, oh, yeah, getting all deep here. But I love thinking about that
stuff. No, it's good. It reminds me of, like, how people, and I think, I'm pretty sure the author of the mantis story was talking about this. They were talking about DMT and how you can see like the grid up in the sky. Everybody who takes DMT, or a number of people that have taken DMT, see like this grid over Earth in the sky. And it's something you can't see unless you're on DMT. And it just like opens your perception to seeing those things. Sure, maybe you're hallucinating, but it is weird how on drugs, certain things, substances, people will have hallucinations that line up with other people's hallucinations. They'll see the machine elves. They'll see the grid up in the sky. They'll see fractals. Mm-hmm. They always see like very similar things. And that's just very interesting to me.
Extremely interesting. And I wish there were some sort of way to really dial in and figure out what is going on, because it'd be one thing if there were like widely reported experiences, but you have Joe Schmo from middle of nowhere, give him some DMT and he sees one of those machine elves. You can't really explain that. Like that is just beyond, I don't know. I'm at a complete loss of words for it.
Exactly.
I think it's just really boils down to ask and you shall receive. The mysteries of the universe are out there. You just got to knock on the right door.
Yeah, I get it. Some people just can't see certain things, and some other people can absolutely see things. They can see spiritual attachments. They can see all kinds of stuff. And for instance, I used to work at a theater, and I remember getting a very weird feeling when I would go up into the attic that was above the projection room in the tower.
Mm.
And I remember seeing somebody walk by, and then I looked around, asked who was there. Nobody was there. There was a woman who worked with me there who was a ghost hunter. And I asked her about the ghost in the attic, and she described the person that I saw walk by, or at least I saw him like kind of out of the corner of my eye. But as far as I could make out, it was very similar to the person that she described. It was just somebody who worked there years ago, and she had picked up on that because they allowed her to do ghost hunts at night in the theater, which was very cool. Very cool old landmark haunted theater. I wish I could go back there and get my old job back, but you know. Anyway, people can just pick up on things and see things that other people can't see. And you're right. I wonder what we see that dogs don't see. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Vice versa, everything. Or even like insects. Praying mantis, fun fact, they can see, like, they have a 3D stereoscopic field, so maybe they can see something else too. Or I know, like, praying mantis, their vision alone exceeds that of other insects and makes them unique. So,
yeah,
I don't know. There's a lot out there, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, dogs can't see certain colors. Maybe there are colors that don't exist to us that exist in reality, just not in our view, you know?
What I like about dogs with their scent is how, like, you can mix a bunch of things together and it's not just going to smell like a collage of things, they're going to be able to smell each individual thing that you put in there.
Yeah. Is it real or is it myth? The dogs that can sniff out cancers and tumors? Is that real?
They do have medical detection dogs that are being used. They have like pilot programs that are out there. So I do know that there's some.
Here's the thing. Let's ask the audience. I'm not even going to Google it. I don't want to rely on Google. I want the audience to tell me. I want there to be an expert who's listening to the podcast. Let us know in the comments on Spotify or in the Discord or on Patreon, however you can get a hold of us. Just send us an email. I want to know about this. And I know somebody, we have so many listeners. I know there's somebody out there that knows about cancer sniffing dogs, because I remember hearing about this as a kid and being like, that's a little woo woo even for me. But getting back to the mantis alien, that is one of my favorite bugs. And I think yours too, right? We had a conversation about that a while back.
Way up there. Mantis, moths are really cool.
I love moths. Yeah. Both happen to exist in the cryptid space, Mothman and mantis aliens.
Hey, yeah. How about that?
I love the mantis alien stories because they're very creepy and cool. But when you think of them as life size or like human size or even larger, that's a very scary visual because they already look like aliens. They look just like an alien.
Yeah.
The alien head, the almond eyes and everything.
And they can flip their heads 180 degrees. Like they're like owls almost. Wise, creepy little things.
Well, that was a great story. Loved it. It was all over the place. It's kind of hard to even talk about this story because it's presented as this is what these beings told me, what reality is. And it's just like their explanation. And it's like, wow, okay. I believe you. That's your truth.
Yeah, mantis are cool and all that, but I was looking through these story titles again, and I have to mention the Sinister Monk story because there was a point in my trip where there was somebody walking through my tent. They just got the wrong tent, and they were wearing like a type of hooded monk type of attire, and it was a little frightening.
Dear Lord, that would terrify me.
Yeah. Yes. And normally it would, but you know, I quickly shined a flashlight on the individual, and then it was like, oh, hey, my bad. And I knew the person, and it was like a true mistake. But in the moment, yeah, it was a little unsettling, and it was very similar to that Sinister Monk story. I just see like this faceless, black hooded figure like standing right by my cot, and it was so terrifying.
Yeah, that is scary. I'm wondering, what was their explanation for coming into your tent?
Just wrong tent and not in the right state of mind, you know what I mean?
Okay. Oh, gotcha.
But it was harmless and we had a good laugh about it, but I don't know. That's all I really have. There's no like paranormal thing. I did at one point think I was looking at a UFO, but then I quickly realized, oh, wait a minute, a blinking green light in that steady succession. That's probably a drone. And sure enough, it was.
Yeah. But drones have ruined UFO sightings for sure, man.
Just like AI has ruined any sort of like credible paranormal video that we could hope to come across in the future.
It's over.
Yeah. As soon as we get like 4K security cameras and everything else, or we start seeing some like actual footage of things, we have AI like Google VO or whatever it is, like producing the most convincing videos ever, which, yeah, it's cool as a novelty and it's fun to play around with and have a good chuckle and keep swiping, but we don't got to keep talking about AI. It's getting kind of stale, but whatever. Moving on.
Yeah, totally. I hate it. I've been spending so much time offline.
Yes.
Just trying to keep occupied with real life stuff because online's just become so lame. It's such a time sink. When it used to be great. We've talked about this a million times. Yes, the internet was way better when we were young. But it's so bad now that I'm finding myself like just
actively resisting it, right?
Yeah, actively. Like I can't, it's almost like my body's revolting as I bring up my phone to look at something and I just grab a book or go outside or, you know, do the dishes.
Paint. I've picked up painting recently and it's a lot of fun. My brother's a genius painter and inspired me to get into it. Highly recommend it.
No way. Yeah, I love your brother's work, by the way. But I literally just asked my wife, like, do you know if there's like a painting class or a group around town? Because I would love to get into painting. It's visual arts is something that I never got into. I was always making music or doing stuff like this. I never did visual arts and I would love to learn how to do it.
We should like really commit to it together and just kind of like compare each other's work and style and, you know, the blind leading the blind. That'd be fun.
Yeah, you're going to surpass me. I'm terrible with visual arts. You're going to surpass me.
I'm not. I'm good with like photography and like conceptualizing, but like pen on paper or like paint on canvas, I've never, ever been good at that.
That's why I want to learn the basics and see if there is something in there. Who knows? Maybe I do have a creative bone in there. Hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey.
All right, let's do it. We'll report back next week and see how things are going.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. End of summer, we should have a good collection of paintings and we can like auction it off for charity. And by charity, I mean...
Nobody's going to want that crap.
Nobody.
Anyways, thanks everybody so much for listening. Send your stories to stories@oddtrails.com to hear them on the show. Sign up for a Patreon at patreon.com/oddtrails to get ad-free versions of all the episodes. Best way to listen. And finally, check out the new episodes of my other podcasts like Let's Not Meet and the Old Time Radio Cast. We'll see you all next week. Everybody stay safe.
Peace out.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest, building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
The all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X provides freedom. Freedom to explore, to go wherever you want, with your whole crew and all your toys. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, and seating for eight, this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.